flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am waking up to headlines that I did not want to see this morning. Did not want to read anything like what is on my feed, my news feed. In fact, I may just go ahead and block, what I'm seeing and reading, because it's downright damn depressing. St. Paul Pioneer Press. Denver cruises in game 3 to hand Timberwolves first postseason defeat. Star Tribune. Headlines. Just nothing I want to see this morning. Wolves stifled, humbled in 117-90 game 3 loss to Nuggets. I couldn't even go to ESPN this morning. Nuggets storm back into series with blowout win over the Wolves. What in the jumping Jehoshaphat happened last night? We were at home to an amazing crowd of energetic people, revived downtown Minneapolis with one single night. All the bars and restaurants were full. We were slapping high fives oh my God. I mean, you talk about unity. These Wolves were bringing people together that didn't even like each other. My ex-husband came over and watched the game with me last night. And you know he don't like me. And then the loss. A loss that none of us saw coming. Because it looked like we were just about to cruise right into the playoffs. I had already taken off for a parade of some sort and, bought my pom-poms and everything. But it didn't happen like that last night. And so the only person that I trust to tell me what did happen is broadcast Hall of Fame sports writer Charles Holman with the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. I have the distinct honor and privilege of having him on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline on the Shaletta Show this morning. Charles. Uncle Charles, you got to tell me what went on last night, because I can't call it. I can't call it. I mean, we have been undefeated in the playoffs. You know, folks was already trying to plan the parade and get the permits. The vendors were ordering more championship shirts. We ready to cruise right into this thing. And then here we got this. It's like we didn't even recognize this team. Oh, okay, nobody saw this coming except for Denver, but did you see it, Uncle Charles? You've been doing this 40 plus years. You've been doing this 40 plus years, so you got a little more insight than the rest of us.
Yes, I saw it coming, and I'll tell you why. Because Denver got embarrassed at game 2. And when you get embarrassed like that, and you are the defending champion, and you have a coach that they have who basically let them know that for the next 3 days, as they came to Minneapolis, I expected to be a much better game last night. I had expected the Wolves to understand that and that what came out and matched their energy, but they didn't. And they also showed that they still are immature kind of group. And meaning that is they've never been in that position before. And so we've never been in that position before. You don't know how to. Okay, we know they're going to come at us. We know that. We got to come at that as well. They didn't do that. They was hoping that maybe it'll flick on and off. And that's been the world's problem in the last couple of years, that when they had a chance to really do something, they did not show up. And unfortunately, you had a bunch of disappointed people last night. I was disappointed as well, but not that I thought that they was going, you know, they was going to go up 3-0. I thought it'd be a better game. They wasn't. So now that brings us to Sunday's game, which will have to be a must-win game, not for the Denver, but for the Wolves, because if they don't win that game tomorrow, I would have to tell you they won't win the series.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on now, because you just said something. You just said something. You said if they don't win on Sunday, they not going to win the series. What makes you so sure, Uncle Charles?
Because you are playing against a team that plays very well together, that has some pride. They want to win the championship again. And if they make the series 2-2, that makes you have to win 2 out of 3. And I don't see Minnesota going back to Denver and beating them 2 out of 3.
Okay, first of all, you said they got some pride. We got some pride, too. Okay, we had our shirts on. We was matching last night. Somebody paid $12,000 for them floor seats. We got...
like P.T. Parlum says, there's somebody out there every minute that you can... I wouldn't pay $12,000 to see any basketball game in my house, let alone go downtown Minneapolis to watch one. So... I'm sorry, my mother didn't raise no fool now.
Okay.
I'm serious again. The Wolves have to win tomorrow, because because Denver looking for a split. Okay, so they now, if they can come back and tie the series up 2-2, going back to Denver, now you put all the pressure on the Wolves. That's not good. Now, the Wolves win tomorrow, they'd be up 3-1. That means you have to just win 1 out of 3. Okay, and that's better odds than if you got to win 2 out of 3. Because, and you're going back to Denver, because, no, it's 2-2-3-1-1-1. So, therefore, you go to Denver, come back here, you go back to Denver, because Denver has a home court advantage. I don't see them winning a 7-game series if it goes to Denver. In a 7-game. I don't see that. Now, again, stranger things have happened. And obviously, the Wolves is a feel-good story. Unfortunately, people got swept into the moment after they went up 2-0, not realizing that you got a team in Denver. And then, you know, I also say this. You don't boo somebody, okay? you boo somebody who threw a heat pad out in the court. Okay, well, that's fine. He made a mistake. But you booed him. Guess what he did? He went off almost 30 points last night. He was motivated by the boos. You don't let sleeping dogs lie, or you let them stay home, or however you want to do that. So, hey, it was a bad game. It was a bad game because, again, the fans came there expecting to win. The Wolves didn't come out with massive energy. And I could see that. I mean, they were down 4-0. Before you can blink. And I said, okay, this don't look good, because they're missing shots that they normally would make, and they don't seem to be coming back that urgency. Okay, fine, we're gonna stop you from scoring. That's how you do in a game in playoff basketball, because Chanel and your audience, you playing only one team, and trust me, they dissected everything of that happening in game two. I'm talking about Denver, dissected it to the minute. Okay, so there's no way, there's no surprises. And so now you're going to have to take this film today. And I'm pretty sure, I like Chris Finch. I think he probably took these guys and took that film apart and said, okay, this is what you didn't do to beat this team. They're not going to lay down. Okay, this is not a team. They're not Phoenix. Phoenix couldn't beat Minnesota. Phoenix was not a good team, you know. But Denver is. And if you beat Denver, you go to another bigger, better team. So it was that's the playoffs, and it keeps people, it keeps me looking and watching. And I'm not a soothsayer. I can't sit up there and predict things. I will say this, and I'll stay on the record: if the Bulls do not win tomorrow, they will not win this series.
Okay, he said what he said, and he did not stutter. We're going to take a break, and I'm going to ask Uncle Charles, what do these Timberwolves have to do to win this game on Sunday? You know, he watched it. He's been doing this thing for 40 years. He's a Hall of Fame sports writer with all the awards that any broadcaster could ever win. He's been doing this a long time, and we're going to pick his brain. Next. It is 12:19 and I have been scratching my head all morning. I got no more dandruff because I have been scratching my head trying to figure out what the hell happened to the Timberwolves last night, and I couldn't trust anybody else to tell me what happened and why and how it happened. Other than the man I'm talking to right now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, we call him Uncle Charles, Hall of Fame sports writer, Charles Harmon with the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder newspaper. 4+ decades of award-winning journalism is what you have provided us, sir. And if nobody ever says it, let me be the eighth that we are so grateful for the work that you do and the writing that you have done. And it is because of you that we have a Reggie Wilson in this town, and we have a Norman C. Wright, and we have, you know, so many of the other African-American sports writers and broadcasters, Leah B. Olsen, Henry Lake. We all owe you a debt of gratitude for opening doors and paving the way and making yourself available even all these years later. One of my students over at the University of Minnesota wants to be a sports writer. I can send him to you. He can learn from you. You telling him all about internships and scholarships and all kind of other cool stuff. And I'm like, you know, you really don't have to do all that. You really don't have to come on my show. You don't have to help interns. You don't have to mentor us. But you do that. And that's just a part of your legacy. And I'm just so grateful in some small way to be connected to your greatness. And so I just need to, before we go any further, I need to say how much I appreciate you and how beloved you are in this community for all these years of excellent writing and journalism.
Well, thank you very much, Loretta. God is good. That's all I can say.
What you can say is, what can these Timberwolves to do to get back on track? Because the train went off the track last night, like that movie, The Fugitive. Remember The Fugitive and Harrison Ford and the train?
I like the David Jansen version. That Harrison Ford. That's how old I am. But seriously, what the world's going to have to do tomorrow night is they're going to have to amp up the same kind of energy, or even more so, that they had in the game two in Denver. They cannot come out and assume that the crowd would get them amped up. They're going to have to come in there, and they want to start really at shoot around tomorrow morning, not just come in at when the game's at 7:30, something like that, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Don't come in at 6:30 getting amped up. They need to be amped up all day long. They need to be anxious. I had a player in high school years ago that he was on the bus. He could not sit still. I was riding to Henry High School. He couldn't sit still. That's how much he wanted to play that game. And when he came off that bus, he was ready to play, and we won that game by 15 points because he came out there and just stopped that best player. That's the kind of amped up that they're going to have to get tomorrow night. And they're going to have to get some contributions from somebody else they don't expect to get it from. And what I mean by that, sometimes that's called an X factor. They got to have somebody that can come in that you don't expect to score. You don't expect to do something, but got to do some spectacular things. That could be slow-mo with Carl Anderson. That could be Jalen McDaniels, who he's considered one of their key players, but he sometimes hides sometimes, and he needs to be more standout. But they need another player. They need another player to come in and do that, because you can't have all five Denver starters finishing double figures like they did last night. You can't have that. You're going to have to, and you don't need five people to score double figures, but you need to not depend on Anthony Edwards to do everything for you. Because if you do that, you know, it's not going to be a successful finish. I think they can win tomorrow. I really do. But I think they learned something. You know, this is a young team. People don't understand. This is a very young team. I don't care about Gobert. I don't care about people like that or Mike Conley. They're still a young team. That's why they brought Gobert and Mike Conley in there, because they need people like that who've been through this wars. Understand that. So now, can they do that tomorrow night? If they don't, they're not going to win the series. They're really not.
Yeah. You know, it's something to be said about Minnesota Knights and the personality of the whole state. We just not a vicious state. We not a bite your neck off state. Is the team just an extension of, you know, who we are as a state and the personality of the state? Because I just felt like, you know, when they were going over to the sidelines last night, just watching, you know, as the cameras followed our key players around, nobody just got dog nasty. Nobody got vicious. Yeah, nobody was punching in the teammates in the chest with their finger. It was just none of that.
You need somebody with a dog in them.
junkyard dog.
Yeah, and see, that's sometimes when you don't understand that. It's the energy. See, that can't be coached. You can't coach energy. You can't coach that kind of passion. You got to have that inside of you. Sam Mitchell said it this morning on NBA radio, is that these guys got to come out. They got to come out and act like they want to win this. Not, you know, it ain't about winning the series right now. It's about winning tomorrow night. Because if you don't win tomorrow night, you're not going to win the series. So, therefore, your focus should be on nothing but winning tomorrow night. Then you put Denver on the hill. You put them on the hills like they were Tuesday night. Denver was demoralized. Trust me, they didn't know what hit them. Oh, well, that's what the Wolves got to do tomorrow night. Like Mike Tyson said one time, you don't know. Your best game plan is all right to get hit in the mouth. And so they're going to do that tomorrow night. It got to be physical. I mean, they've been physical all playoffs. So don't back up down. Don't back down now because what? It's called Mother's Day?
My mama watching. I don't want her to see me cussing on TV. You know what? This is what I think. I don't know what was the team? It was a football team. They were trying to energize and inspire their players, and they brought Ric Flair in there. And baby, Ric Flair went in there, and he went to wooing and hooing and hollering, and they started quoting Ric Flair. I think it was like Seattle when Russell Wilson was there.
And they brought
Ric Flair in there. We got to see if the Junkyard Dog is still alive or George Clinton can come in and sing, you know, Atomic Dog. Something got to happen.
They need something. They really need to. I had a ball player one time that he was so nice, Shaletta. And I said, what do you hate? I said, you know what I hate? I hate rice. I can't stand rice. And so if you put that on my plate, I'm going to be mad. I don't want to eat it. I say, what do you don't like? And so I would tell him that before we start the game. I said, what do you don't like tonight? And he'd say something. He'd go out there and play hard. I mean, you're going to do that sometimes. Now, remember, these are kids I was talking to. But, you gotta make out tell Anderson, you know, Edwards around there, what do you don't like? You don't like to be in compared to MJ? Then stop, you know, then get mad about it. You know, do something to get them going. So it'll be interesting tomorrow night. That's all I can say. It'll be an interesting game tomorrow
all
night.
All right. Now, I got to take you back to this week because you had the honor of being in the room when Dawn Staley came to St. Kate's. What was that like? I didn't get to go. I was working, but, you know, she always is an inspiration. She's just, you know, coming off this perfect season where she won a championship. You know, one of the most respected coaches, men or women, in college sports. You know, is there one takeaway that you remember from her being here that you will never forget?
Her realness. I mean, she did not hide the fact of how much she felt it was a divine intervention on why that team won. And she said that clearly. She said, if you asked me to begin a year, what this team's going to win a championship, I'd have said no. He said, God put us through stuff. They had us lose last year. And because of that loss, we was able to galvanize and put these kids together and play. And she said, that's why she had never lost control in a game. And if you remember, at the end of that game, she cried. And she's never done that before. She said, I did that because I knew God did this. It was all God that did this. So I was really impressed by that because, you know, sometimes you're in a speech, even though he's in a Catholic college, but sometimes right. you're in a speech like that, you don't bring out religion. But she brought that out. We talked a little bit afterwards at the reception because she remembered I got my 22 award was the year they won here. And, you know,
yes.
her and I took some pictures
took
together.
Took some pictures so together. Remembered. I remember.
Yeah, so, but she was, you know, she was just saying, you know, she that's why I was getting away with it. You know, just and she's very comical. She's very humorous. She, you know, she'll make jokes about things. She talked about how they didn't the coaches would sit there and say, "We're going to drink the Kool-Aid." They said it all season long. They just said, "We're going to drink the Kool-Aid." And then one of the players finally, they was on a plane going to the Final Four. One of the players said to her, "Coach, do you like us now?" I mean, you know, so she admitted, you know, those kind of things you don't admit in a big crowd like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you might say it to a couple of people, but she said, yeah, you said she kept telling them she didn't like them. You know, she loved them, but she didn't like them, you know, because mm-hmm. they were so young. They were so, you know, all kind of things. She had to connect with, she had to meet them where they are. You know, rather than trying to bring them down to her level. So it was good. She was very good. She was dynamic. She got a couple standing ovations.
Really?
She was very good. I'm happy I was there. I was invited by the only black golfer in the MIAC, and she plays at St. Kate. She introduced her. And so that's why I was there. So I got the little private, I got a little invitation.
You got the little VIP.
Oh, yeah, because she appreciated me writing my stories on her, and that was nice. So, but yeah, I was glad to be there. You know, I could have done other things that night, but I was glad. And now I got a chance to touch base her a little bit. So that was fun because, you know, I hadn't talked to her in person since 22. So
yeah.
that was fun. But yeah, impressive. I had a person, I heard a Cheney coach, the present Cheney coach told me that she is their generation C. Vivian Stringer.
Oh, wow. Okay,
I'm using that story down right there.
I was just about to ask you that. What was your next? What's your next? Because I like to know what's next. What you got coming up in the spokesman recording? You got to tell me before you get out of here. What's next?
Okay, do you know they're going to be America's first all black talk sports station? Gonna
no.
Start next week in Detroit.
What?
Yep.
Oh,
it comes on the air May 2017th, and I talked to one of the co-owners. They're all based in but the first all black, so it'll be all black all day, all night. So that's one of my stories. My second story is about why there's only three black head coaches in the WNBA in a league that's almost all black.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a story on one of the black pitchers at the Minnesota Twins. So that's my lineup for this week.
All right. Well, we will be looking forward in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. Always amazing and an honor to have the knowledge and wisdom of Charles Harmon, broadcast Hall of Fame sports writer here with us on the Shaletta Show. We love you, Uncle Charles. Tell everybody around you, including your beloved wife and your daughters-in-law, that we say Happy Mother's Day.
I will. Love you too as well. Same
All right.
You.
Okay, and stick around because there's an amazing mama who has some amazing children, and I'm not talking about myself, who did an amazing thing, and I want to recognize them. More on that story when we come back. You know, I am so grateful to be in Minnesota. I tell Governor Walz all the time that he should really, he and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanigan, talk more about what this state is doing for families who have children with special needs, like my friend Charlotte, her daughter Kylie has autism, and she is going to sixth grade, almost in sixth grade, just like my daughter Cameron. They're the same age, and actually they could be twins. They look just like. I told her I'm gonna do a swab and make sure Sean not the child daddy, because her daughter and my daughter look way too much alike. And so she and I have gone to galas for autism families together. And there's just a strong bond with moms and dads in this community who have kids with autism. And we talk about a lot of stuff. But one of the things that really concerns us is whether or not our children will be able to make friends. Will they have lifelong relationships where other kids won't ostracize them or make fun of them or misuse them or take advantage of them? It's a hurting feeling when your child comes home with a black eye and they can't tell you how they got it because they can't talk. You know? Or they come home and pretend to be sick because they don't want to go back to school because somebody's taking advantage of them. And so just having those good friendships for special needs kids means so much. My daughter Cameron did not talk for a long time. And so she wouldn't get invited to the sleepovers and the birthday celebrations at the Chuck E. Cheese and the Children's Museum. And the kids would come back and talk about all the fun they had. And Cameron would just stand there and be listening to them. And I remember one day going up to one of the parents and I said, hey, listen, y'all had a party over the weekend and you didn't invite my child. She has autism. Is there a reason that she, I'm just asking. I'm not saying you have to invite her. I was just asking. She said, well, my daughter says that your daughter won't talk to her when she tries to talk to her. And so she thinks that she doesn't like her. And that's when I really started writing these books about my kids, so that we could educate their normal developing friends about autism. And when I wrote Cameron's book, I sent 30 copies to her classroom because I want every one of her classmates to know and understand what autism is, right? And so once her friends understood why she wasn't talking to them and they started being her helpers, do you know this girl tested off the spectrum? We spent hundreds of hours in therapy, thousands of dollars on doctors and medicines and supplements and some stuff we probably really didn't need. But it was the support of her friends that helped her to get better in her autism journey. And so when I saw in the Star Tribune a story by Jack O'Connor that there was a group of elementary school students lobbying the Minneapolis school board to get better playground equipment for their classmates with disabilities, I was like, okay, I got to invite Jay O'Connor on the Shaletta Show so I could figure out what's the story all about. But baby, when I kept reading, I realized I didn't need Jay O'Connor, the author of the story. I needed Nicole LaBelle. She's the mama of the kids who went to the school board and said, we need better playground equipment, more handicap accessible playground equipment for our special needs friends so we can play with them on the playground without barriers. Baby, let me tell you something. Just talking about it is giving me the tingles. Broke me down to my brake pads. And Nicole is joining me right now. And Nicole, from one mama to the next, honey, let me just say thank you. Girl, I'm trying not to cry on my own show. Happy Mother's Day to you, and thank you for raising your children to know how important it is to support their different abilities classmates. And not just that, but to advocate for them. Tell me how this all came about, girl.
Oh, thank you for having me. Your story brought me to tears as I was listening. You know, when my daughter was born and was developing normally, I, you know, had all the normal questions that a mother would have. But then when I was noticing some things were a little bit different about my oldest, Fiona, you know, that's when I kind of started this journey of advocacy that I didn't know that I would be on. Mm-hmm. So we get that diagnosis. We don't know what it means. We now have to look different places to different families to try to find out what to expect in life. And when we got to school, I had this feeling like now other people would know more than I would. And I would start to feel like some of that burden come off of me. And, you know, it really was the opposite. It was mm-hmm. a big wake-up call when I got to kindergarten and I was like, wait. And that was the first time where Fiona was only able to be with her peers at the beginning during recess and lunch. And I said, how is she going to make friends? She can't play on the playground and she can't speak. How, if she's not involved with her classmates at any point except recess, and she has to walk with an aide around the perimeter of the playground, how will she make any friends? Why would she even want to go to school? And so that's when my advocacy kind of journey started. And, you know, it was siloed to my daughter for the longest time, but I had more children and, you know, they saw the things that I was doing for Fiona, and she, you know, changed settings. So she's with her peers all the time. And she has a wonderful one-to-one aide, and, you know, we're always doing things together. And the kids started asking questions about, you know, when Fiona couldn't do something, or why we had to drive so far to Woodbury to play at a playground with Fiona, or why we had to stand in line at the local playgrounds for the one swing, you know, that she could enjoy. And so that's just kind of been like a side passion project of mine is the playgrounds. And so when we chose to go to Ella Baker, because they have a really strong mission statement for, you know, equity and making sure that they're inclusive and all students, you know, they'll meet them where their students are. I was really hopeful, and we've had a great experience. The special education department there is amazing. And they're up for a new playground, and so many Minneapolis schools are. Like, it's time to replace the whole playground. And so I was really hopeful. I was like, great, we're replacing the whole playground. It is time to do it. They give us a budget. We're going to use it right. We're going to make it for all students. And as the process went along, I was hearing from the special education department, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to be an easy journey. And Barton School had gotten a playground that wasn't that accessible. And I was like, that really doesn't make sense. And they were like, you know, would you lend your voice? And I said, how loud do you want it? And, you know, I sent an email. And the day that I sent an email, I was talking to the girls. And I was like, you know, advocacy is a big part of my life and Fiona's life and your life. You know, when we see something, we're going to say something. And sometimes that's wearing a shirt of support. Sometimes that's sending an email. Sometimes that's starting a petition. Sometimes that's hearing someone say something and sharing your view to give them another perspective that they might not get from someone else. So, you know, everyone can do something. And that day, I was so inspired. My 10 and 11 year old, you know, they wrote out a little petition and they went to everybody on their bus, even that slightly intimidating seventh grader in the back, and they got everybody to sign it, you know. They're like, even he signed it. And I was like, so what can we learn about him? Like, he's for inclusive playgrounds. That's a great thing. And then they were like, can we walk around the block and knock on doors? You know, and these tender young ages where they're like ready to go around their neighborhood and knock on the door and say, my sister deserves to be able to play. Do you think she does? And it's a resounding yes. It's why would we take this budget and not make sure everybody can play? And so we kept thinking we'd make a little traction. And then we kept hearing things like deadlines and inflation and we kept going. So we went to the school board and we found a great advocate and Director Emmerich. And they paused the three contracts that they had. We asked, you know, what is the board going to do to make sure that as we are building new playgrounds, that we're building playgrounds for all students, because it's not just for the students, it's for the community.
Right, right. Because people are going to be coming there in the summertime. Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Before school, after school, when you're an incoming parent to a new school or your child is a kindergartner, you go visit the school and you say, hey, look at this playground. Where's the place where all students meet up from different classes, from, you know, the CDC classroom, the classrooms that where you don't get to see your peers, but you're all going to walk onto that playground. And if it's an inclusive playground that includes everyone, there's no barriers. And friends and students and community members, all different abilities, can just walk on to that playground and be kids, not think about it, not figure out how you're going to play together. No one has to sit on the side. They're just going to go. My daughter had a birthday party. We drove out to Woodbury to this inclusive playground. She had made great friends at Ella Baker. And she was, you know, 9. And she walked away with her friends without me and went and played. And I never thought that would be possible. Mm. And my mama heart just exploded, because that's what these spaces can give our kids. And that's where I became, you know, dedicated to helping all of these special education staff and the PTs at the schools. They want this. They know their students. They know their kids. And sometimes, you know, you just need to keep that momentum and get more people involved and make that change. And I'm so happy I'm able to lend my experience to help in any way I can. Because Fiona's going to be in middle school and she doesn't use the playground quite as much. But I know that feeling I had as a mom of a kindergartner. I know my friends' families. And I just think it's something that we can do now, that families of the future and Minneapolis public schools, we don't have to do that to kids. And we have the opportunity right now with the budget, with the replacement. I'm not asking for more money. I'm just asking you to do the smart thing with what you have right now.
Okay. Well, before you go, I just want to tell you again how grateful I am to your family. And here's what I would like to do for your children. I would like to buy your children season passes to Valley Fair. I just heard Taylor Rivera say something about the season is opening. And so when we get off the phone, Josh is going to get all your contact information. And I want to buy each one of your kids a season pass to go to Valley Fair so they can visit as much as they like. And you tell them Auntie Shaletta said thank you for speaking up for kids like hers. And I just want to wish you one more time an amazing Mother's Day. God bless you. And thank you for the work that you are doing to help kids like mine.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much.
You're welcome. And y'all stick around. We've got even more to come on the Shaletta Show. That is my friend Fanshawn's favorite song. We have been friends since middle school, and she was just listening in to Nicole LaBelle's interview talking about that slightly intimidating seventh grader, and reminded me of Fro, the bully at our school, and how much bigger she was than us and how she intimidated and sometimes terrorized us. And Fanshawn said they should have really leaned into social promotion for that young lady, because I swear Fro looked like she was about 30 years old in the seventh grade with grandkids. It was not a good look for the rest of us. Don't go anywhere. We've got more of the Shaletta Show coming up after the break.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am waking up to headlines that I did not want to see this morning. Did not want to read anything like what is on my feed, my news feed. In fact, I may just go ahead and block, you know, what what I'm seeing and reading, because it's downright damn depressing. St. Paul Pioneer Press: Denver cruises in Game 3 to hand Timberwolves' first postseason defeat. Star Tribune headlines: just nothing I want to see this morning. Wolves stifled, humbled in 117-90 Game 3 loss to Nuggets. I couldn't even go to ESPN this morning. Nuggets storm back into series with blowout win over the Wolves. What in the jumping Jehoshaphat happened last night? We were at home to an amazing crowd of energetic people, revived downtown Minneapolis with one single night. All the bars and restaurants were full. We were slapping high fives oh my God. I mean, you talk about unity. These Wolves were bringing people together that didn't even like each other. My ex-husband came over and watched the game with me last night. And you know he don't like me. And then the loss. A loss that none of us saw coming. Because it looked like we were just about to cruise right into the playoffs. I had already taken off for a parade of some sort and, bought my pom-poms and everything. But it didn't happen like that last night. And so the only person that I trust to tell me what did happen is broadcast Hall of Fame sports writer Charles Holman with the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. I have the distinct honor and privilege of having him on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline on the Shaletta Show this morning. Charles. Uncle yes, Charles. Uncle Charles. Uncle Charles, you got to tell me what went on last night, because I can't call it. I can't call it. I mean, we have been undefeated in the playoffs. You know, folks was already trying to plan the parade and get the permits. The vendors were ordering more championship shirts. We ready to cruise right into this thing. And then here we got this. It's like we didn't even recognize this team. Oh, okay, nobody saw this coming except for Denver, but did you see it, Uncle Charles? You've been doing this 40 plus years. You've been doing this 40 plus years, so you got a little more insight than the rest of us.
Yes, I saw it coming, and I'll tell you why. Because Denver got embarrassed at Game 2. And when you get embarrassed like that, and you are the defending champion, and you have a coach that they have who basically let them know that for the next 3 days, as they came to Minneapolis, I expected to be a much better game last night. I had expected the Wolves to understand that, and that what came out and matched their energy, but they didn't. And they also showed that they still are immature kind of group. And meaning that is they've never been in that position before. And so we've never been in that position before. You don't know how to. Okay, we know they're going to come at us. We know that. We got to come at that as well. They didn't do that. They was hoping that maybe it'll flick on and off. And that's been the Wolves' problem in the last couple of years, that when they had a chance to really do something, they did not show up. And unfortunately, you had a bunch of disappointed people last night. I was disappointed as well, but not that I thought that they was going, they was going to go up 3-0. I thought it'd be a better game. They wasn't. So now that brings us to Sunday's game, which will have to be a must-win game. Not for the Denver, but for the Wolves. Because if they don't win that game tomorrow, I would have to tell you, they won't win the series.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on now, because you just said something. You just said something. You said if they don't win on Sunday, they not going to win the series. What makes you so sure, Uncle Charles?
Because you are playing against a team that plays very well together, that has some pride. They want to win the championship again. And if they make the series 2-2, that makes you have to win 2 out of 3. And I don't see Minnesota going back to Denver and beating them 2 out of 3.
Okay, first of all, you said they got some pride. We got some pride, too. Okay, we had our shirts on. We was matching last night. Somebody paid $12,000 for them floor seats. We got –
Well, like P.T. Parlum says, there's somebody out there every minute that you can. I wouldn't pay $12,000 to see any basketball game in my house, let alone go downtown Minneapolis and watch one. So, I'm sorry, Mama didn't raise no fool now.
Okay.
But I'm serious again. The Wolves have to win tomorrow because because Denver looking for a split. Okay, so if they can come back and tie the series up 2-2, going back to Denver, now you put all the pressure on the Wolves. That's not good. Now if the Wolves win tomorrow, they'd be up 3-1. That means you have to just win one out of three. Okay, and that's better odds than if you got to win 2 out of 3. Because you're going back to Denver. Because no, it's 2-2, 3-1, 1-1, 1. So therefore, you go to Denver, come back here. You go back to Denver because Denver has a home court advantage. I don't see them winning a 7-game series if it goes to Denver in a 7-game. I don't see that. Now again, stranger things have happened, and obviously, the Wolves is a feel good story. Unfortunately, people got swept into the moment. After they went up 2-0, not realizing that you got a team in Denver. And then I also say this: you don't boo somebody, okay? you boo somebody who threw a heat pad out in the court, okay? Well, that's fine. He made a mistake, but you booed him. Guess what he did? He went off almost 30 points last night. He was motivated by the boos. You don't let sleeping dogs lie. Or you let them stay home, or however you want to do that. So, it was a bad game. It was a bad game because, again, the fans came there expecting to win. The Wolves didn't come out with massive energy. And I could see that. I mean, they were down 4-0 before you can blink. And I said, okay, this don't look good because they're missing shots that they normally would make, and they don't seem to be coming back that urgency. Okay, fine, we're gonna stop you from scoring. That's how you do in a game of in playoff basketball. Because Chanel and your audience, you playing only one team, and trust me, they dissected everything of that happening in game two. I'm talking about Denver dissected it to the minute. Okay, so there's no way, there's no surprises, and so now you're gonna have to take this film today. And I'm pretty sure I like Chris Finch. I think he probably took these guys and took that film apart and said, okay, this is what you didn't do to beat this team. They're not going to lay down. Okay, this is not a team. They're not Phoenix. Phoenix couldn't beat Minnesota. Phoenix was not a good team, you know. But Denver is. And if you beat Denver, you go into another bigger, better team. So that's the playoffs. And it keeps me looking and watching, and I'm not a soothsayer. I can't sit up there and predict things. I will say this, and I'll stay on the record. If the Wolves do not win tomorrow, they will not win the series.
Okay. He said what he said, and he did not stutter. We're going to take a break, and I'm going to ask Uncle Charles, what do these Timberwolves have to do to win this game on Sunday? You know, he watched it. He's been doing this thing for 40 years. He's a Hall of Fame sports writer with all the awards that any broadcaster could ever win. He's been doing this a long time, and we're going to pick his brain next. It is 12:19, and I have been scratching my head all morning. I got no more dandruff. Because I have been scratching my head trying to figure out what the hell happened to the Timberwolves last night. And I couldn't trust anybody else to tell me what happened and why and how it happened. Other than the man I'm talking to right now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. We call him Uncle Charles, Hall of Fame sports writer. Charles Harmon with the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder newspaper. 4+ decades of award-winning journalism is what you have provided us, sir. And if nobody ever says it, let me be the eighth that we are so grateful for the work that you do and the writing that you have done. And it is because of you that we have a Reggie Wilson in this town, and we have a Norman C. Wright, and we have, so many of the other African-American sports writers and broadcasters, Aaliyah B. Olsen, Henry Lake. We all owe you a debt of gratitude for opening doors and paving the way and making yourself available even all these years later. One of my students over at the University of Minnesota wants to be a sports writer. I can send him to you. He can learn from you. You telling him all about internships and scholarships and all kind of other cool stuff. And I'm like, you really don't have to do all that. You really don't have to come on my show. You don't have to help interns. You don't have to mentor us. But you do that. And that's just a part of your legacy. And I'm just so grateful in some small way to be connected to your greatness. And so I just need to, before we go any further, I need to say how much I appreciate you and how beloved you are in this community for all these years of excellent writing and journalism.
Well, thank you very much, Loretta. God is good. That's all I can say.
What you can say is, what can these Timberwolves to do to get back on track? Because the train went off the track last night, like that movie, The Fugitive. Remember The Fugitive and Harrison Ford and the train?
I like the David Jansen version. That that's how old I am. but seriously, what the world's gonna have to do tomorrow night is they're gonna have to amp up the same kind of energy, or even more so, that they had in the game two in Denver. They cannot come out and assume that the crowd will get them amped up. They're going to have to come in there, and they want to start really at shoot around tomorrow morning, not just come in at when the game's at 7:30, something like that, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Don't come in at 6:30 getting amped up. They need to be amped up all day long. They need to be anxious. I had a player in high school years ago that he was on a bus. He could not sit still. I was riding to Henry High School. He couldn't sit still. That's how much he wanted to play that game. And when he came off that bus, he was ready to play, and we won that game by 15 points because he came out there and just stopped that best player. That's the kind of amped up that they're going to have to get tomorrow night. And they're going to have to get some contributions from somebody else they don't expect to get it from. And what I mean by that, sometimes that's called an X factor. They got to have somebody that can come in that you don't expect to score. You don't expect to do something, but they got to do some spectacular things. That could be slow-mo with Carl Anderson. That could be Jaden McDaniels, who he's considered one of their key players, but he sometimes hides sometimes, and he needs to be more standout. But they need another player. They need another player to come in and do that, because you can't have all five Denver starters finishing double figures like they did last night. You can't have that. You're going to you don't need five people to score double figures, but you need to not depend on Anthony Edwards to do everything for you. Because if you do that, it's not going to be a successful finish. I think they can win tomorrow. I really do. But I think they learned something. You know, this is a young team. People don't understand. This is a very young team. I don't care about Gobert. I don't care about people like that or Mike Conley. They're still a young team. That's why they brought Gobert and Mike Conley in there, because they need people like that who's been through this wars. Understand that. So now, can they do that tomorrow night? If they don't, they're not going to win the series. They're really not.
Yeah. It's something to be said about Minnesota Knights and the personality of the whole state. We just not a vicious state. We not a bite your neck off state. Is the team just an extension of, who we are as a state and the personality of the state? Because I just felt like, when they were going over to the sidelines last night, just watching, as the cameras followed our key players around, nobody just got dog nasty. Nobody got vicious. Nobody was punching the teammates in the chest with their finger. It was just none of that.
You need somebody with a dog in them.
some junkyard dog.
Yeah, and see, that's sometimes when you don't understand that. It's the energy. See, that can't be coached. You can't coach energy. You can't coach that kind of passion. You got to have that inside of you. Sam Mitchell said it this morning on NBA radio is that these guys got to come out. They got to come out and act like they want to win this. Not, you know, it ain't about winning the series right now. It's about winning tomorrow night. Because if you don't win tomorrow night, you're not going to win the series. So, therefore, your focus should be nothing but winning tomorrow night. Then you put Denver on the hill. You put them on the hills like they were Tuesday night. Denver was demoralized. Trust me, they didn't know what hit them. Oh, well, that's what the Wolves got to do tomorrow night. Like Mike Tyson said one time, you don't know you won't your best game plan is all right to get hit in the mouth. And so they're going to do that tomorrow night. They're going and it got to be physical. I mean, they've been physical all playoffs. So don't back up down. Don't back down now because what? It's called Mother's Day?
My mama watching. I don't want her to see me cussing on TV. You know what? This is what I think. I don't know what was the team? It was a football team. They were trying to energize and inspire their players, and they brought Ric Flair in there. And baby, Ric Flair went in there, and he went to wooing and hooing and hollering, and they started quoting Ric Flair. I think it was like Seattle when Russell Wilson was there.
Like that,
and they brought Ric Flair in there. We got to see if the Junkyard Dog is still alive or George Clinton can come in and sing, you know, Atomic Dog. Something got to happen.
They need something. They really need to. I had a ball player one time that he was so nice, Shaletta. And I said, what do you hate? I said, you know what I hate? I hate rice. I can't stand rice. And so if you put that in my plate, I'm going to be mad. I don't want to eat it. I say, what do you don't like? And so I would tell him that before we start the game. I said, what do you don't like tonight? And he'd say something. And he'd go out there and play hard. I mean, you're gonna do that sometimes. Now, remember, these are kids I was talking to. But, sometimes you gotta make out tell Anderson, you know, Edwards around there, what do you don't like? What you don't like them? You don't like to be compared with MJ? Then stop, you know, then get mad about it. You know, do something to get them going. So it'll be interesting tomorrow night. That's all I can say. It'll be an interesting game tomorrow
all
night.
All right. Now, I got to take you back to this week because you had the honor of being in the room when Dawn Staley came to St. Kate's. What was that like? I didn't get to go. I was working, but, you know, she always is an inspiration. She's just, you know, coming off this perfect season where she won a championship. You know, one of the most respected coaches, men or women in college sports. You know, is there one takeaway that you remember from her being here that you will never forget?
Her realness. I mean, she did not hide the fact of how much she felt it was a divine intervention on why that team won. And she said that clearly. She said, if you asked me to get a year, was this team going to win a championship? I'd have said no. He said, God put us through stuff. They had us lose last year. And because of that loss, we was able to galvanize and put these kids together and play. And she said, that's why she had never lost control in a game. And if you remember, at the end of that game, she cried. And she's never done that before. She said, I did that because I knew God did this. It was all God that did this. So I was really impressed by that because, you know, sometimes you in a speech, even though he's in a Catholic college, but sometimes you in a speech like that, you don't bring out religion. But she brought that out. We talked a little bit afterwards at the reception because she remembered I got my, you know, my 22 award was the year they won here. And, you know, her and I took some pictures together. But she was, you know, she was just saying, you know, she that's what I could get away with. You know, and she's very comical. She's very humorous. She, you know, she'll make jokes about things. She talked about how the coaches would sit there and say, we're going to drink the Kool-Aid. They said it all season long. They just said, we're going to drink the Kool-Aid. And then one of the players finally, they was on a plane going to the Final Four. One of the players said to her, Coach, do you like us now? I mean, you know, so she admitted, you know, you do kind of things you don't admit in a big crowd like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you might say it to a couple of people, but she said, you said she should tell them she didn't like them. She loved them, but she didn't like them, you know, because they were so young. They were so, you know, all kind of things. She had to connect with, she had to meet them where they are. you know, rather than trying to bring them down to her level. So it was good. It was she was very good. She was dynamic. Got a couple standing ovations. She was very good. I'm happy I was there. I was invited by the only black golfer in the MIAC, and she plays at St. Kate. She introduced her. And so that's why I was there. So I got the little private. So I got a little invitation.
You got the little VIP.
Oh yeah, because she appreciated me writing my stories on her, and that was nice. So, but yeah, I was glad to be there. You know, I could have done other things that night, but I was glad. And now I got a chance to touch base her a little bit. So that was fun because you know she, you know, I hadn't talked to her in person since 22. So
yeah,
that was, you know, that was fun. But yeah, yeah, impressive. I had a person, I heard a Cheney, the present Cheney coach told me that she is their generation C. Vivian Stringer.
Oh, wow. Okay,
I'm using that in a story that I'll write
there. And I was just about to ask you that. What was your next? What's your next? Because I like to know what's next. What you got coming up in the spokesman recorder? You got to tell me before you get out of here. What's next?
Okay. Do you know there's going to be America's first all black talk sports station?
Going to
start next week in Detroit.
What?
Yep.
Oh,
it comes on the air May 2017th, and I talked to one of the co-owners. They're all based in but it's the first all black. So it'll be all black, all day, all light. So that's one of my stories. My second story is about why there's only three black head coaches in the WNBA in a league that's almost all black. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a story on one of the black pitchers at the Minnesota Twins. So that's my lineup for this week.
All right. Well, we will be looking forward in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. Always amazing and an honor to have the knowledge and wisdom of Charles Harmon, broadcast Hall of Fame sports writer here with us on the Shaletta Show. We love you, Uncle Charles. Tell everybody around you, including your beloved wife and your daughters-in-law, that we say Happy Mother's Day.
I will. Love you too as well. Same
All right. Okay, and stick around because there's an amazing mama who has some amazing children, and I'm not talking about myself, who did an amazing thing, and I want to recognize them. More on that story when we come back. You know, I am so grateful to be in Minnesota. I tell Governor Walz all the time that he should really, he and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanigan, talk more about what this state is doing for families who have children with special needs, like my friend Charlotte, her daughter Kylie has autism, and she is going to sixth grade, almost in sixth grade, just like my daughter Cameron. They're the same age, and actually they could be twins. They look just like. I told her I'm gonna do a swab and make sure Sean not the child daddy, because her daughter and my daughter look way too much alike. And so she and I have gone to galas for autism families together. And there's just a strong bond with moms and dads in this community who have kids with autism. And we talk about a lot of stuff. But one of the things that really concerns us is whether or not our children will be able to make friends. Will they have lifelong relationships? Where other kids won't ostracize them or make fun of them or misuse them or take advantage of them. It's a hurting feeling when your child comes home with a black eye and they can't tell you how they got it because they can't talk. You know? Or they come home and pretend to be sick because they don't want to go back to school because somebody's taking advantage of them. And so just having those good friendships for special needs kids means so much. My daughter Cameron did not talk for a long time. And so she wouldn't get invited to the sleepovers and the birthday celebrations at the Chuck E. Cheese and the Children's Museum. And the kids would come back and talk about all the fun they had. And Cameron would just stand there and be listening to them. And I remember one day going up to one of the parents and I said, hey, listen, y'all had a party over the weekend and you didn't invite my child. She has autism. Is there a reason that she, I'm just asking, I'm not saying you have to invite her. I was just asking. She said, well, my daughter says that your daughter won't talk to her when she tries to talk to her. And so she thinks that she doesn't like her. And that's when I really started writing these books about my kids so that we could educate their normal developing friends about autism. And when I wrote Cameron's book, I sent 30 copies to her classroom because I want every one of her classmates to know and understand what autism is, right? And so once her friends understood why she wasn't talking to them and they start being her helpers, do you know this girl tested off the spectrum? We spent hundreds of hours in therapy, thousands of dollars on doctors and medicines and supplements and some stuff we probably really didn't need. But it was the support of her friends that helped her to get better in her autism journey. And so when I saw in the Star Tribune a story by Jack O'Connor that there was a group of elementary school students lobbying the Minneapolis school board to get better playground equipment for their classmates with disabilities, I was like, okay, I gotta invite Jay O'Connor on the Shaletta Show so I could figure out what's the story all about. But baby, when I kept reading, I realized I didn't need Jay O'Connor, the author of the story. I needed Nicole LaBelle. She's the mama of the kids who went to the school board and said, we need better playground equipment, more handicap accessible playground equipment for our special needs friends so we can play with them on the playground without barriers. Baby, let me tell you something. Just talking about it is giving me the tingles. Broke me down to my brake pads. And Nicole is joining me right now. And Nicole, from one mama to the next. Honey, let me just say thank you. Girl, I'm trying not to cry on my own show. happy Mother's Day to you. And thank you for raising your children to know how important it is to support their different abilities classmates. And not just that, but to advocate for them. Tell me how this all came about, girl.
Oh, thank you for having me. Your story brought me to tears as I was listening. You know, when my daughter was born and was developing normally, I, you know, had all the normal questions that a mother would have. But then when I was noticing some things were a little bit different about my oldest, Fiona, you know, that's when I kind of started this journey of advocacy that I didn't know that I would be on. Mm-hmm. So we get that diagnosis. We don't know what it means. We now have to look different places to different families to try to find out what to expect in life. And when we got to school, I had this feeling like now other people would know more than I would. And I would start to feel like some of that burden come off of me. And, you know, it really was the opposite. It was mm-hmm. a big wake up call when I got to kindergarten and I was like, wait. And that was the first time where Fiona was only able to be with her peers at the beginning during recess and lunch. And I said, how mm-hmm. is she going to make friends? Mm. She can't play on the playground and she can't speak. Mm-hmm. How, if she's not involved with her classmates at any point except recess, and she has to walk with an aide around the perimeter of the playground, how will she make any friends? Why would she even want to go to school? And so that's when my advocacy kind of journey started. And, you know, it was siloed to my daughter for the longest time, but I had more children and, you know, they saw the things that I was doing for Fiona and she, you know, changed settings. So she's with her peers all the time and she has a wonderful one-to-one aide and, you know, we're always doing things together. And the kids started asking questions about, you know, when Fiona couldn't do something or why we had to drive so far to Woodbury to play at a playground with Fiona, or why we had to stand in line at the local playgrounds for the one swing, you know, that she could enjoy. And so that's just kind of been like a side passion project of mine is the playgrounds. And so when we chose to go to Ella Baker, because they have a really strong mission statement for, you know, equity and making sure that they're inclusive and all students, you know, they'll meet them where their students are. I was really hopeful, and we've had a great experience. The special education department there is amazing, and they're up for a new playground. And so many Minneapolis schools are like, it's time to replace the whole playground. And okay. So I was really hopeful. I was like, great, we're replacing the whole playground. It is time to do it. They give us a budget. We're going to use it right. We're going to make it for all students. And as the process went along, I was hearing from the special education department, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to be an easy journey. And Barton School had gotten a playground that wasn't that accessible. And I was like, that really doesn't make sense. And they were like, you know, would you lend your voice? And I said, how loud do you want it? And, you know, I sent an email. And the day that I sent an email, I was talking to the girls. And I was like, you know, advocacy is a big part of my life and Fiona's life and your life. You know, when we see something, we're going to say something. And sometimes that's wearing a shirt of support. Sometimes that's sending an email. Sometimes that's starting a petition. Sometimes that's hearing someone say something and sharing your view to give them another perspective that they might not get from someone else. So, you know, everyone can do something. And that day, I was so inspired. My 10 and 11 year old, you know, they wrote out a little petition and they went to everybody on their bus. Even that slightly intimidating seventh grader in the back, and they got everybody to sign it. You know, they were like, even he signed it, and I was like, so what can we learn about him? Like, he's for inclusive playgrounds. That's a great thing. And then they were like, can we walk around the block and knock on doors? You know, and these tender young ages where they're like ready to go around their neighborhood and knock on the door and say, my sister deserves to be able to play. Do you think she does? And it's a resounding yes. It's why would we take this budget and not make sure everybody can play? And so we kept thinking we'd make a little traction. And then we kept hearing things like deadlines and inflation. And we kept going. So we went to the school board and we found a great advocate and Director Emmerich. And they paused the three contracts that they had. We asked, you know, what is the board going to do to make sure that as we are building new playgrounds, that we're building playgrounds for all students? Because it's not just for the students, it's for the community.
Right, right. Because people are going to be coming there in the summertime. Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Before school, after school, when you're an incoming parent to a new school or your child is a kindergartner, you go visit the school and you say, hey, look at this playground. Where's the place where all students meet up from different classes, from, you know, the CDC classroom, the classrooms that where you don't get to see your peers, but you're all going to walk onto that playground. And if it's an inclusive playground that includes everyone, there's no barriers. And friends and students and community members, all different abilities, can just walk on to that playground and be kids, not think about it. Not figure out how you're going to play together. No one has to sit on the side. They're just going to go. My daughter had a birthday party. We drove out to Woodbury to this inclusive playground. She has made great friends at Ella Baker. And she was, you know, 9. And she walked away with her friends without me and went and played. And I never thought that would be possible. Mm. And my mama heart just exploded because that's what these spaces can give our kids. And that's where I became, you know, dedicated to helping all of these special education staff and the PTs at the schools. They want this. They know their students. They know their kids. And sometimes, you know, you just need to keep that momentum and get more people involved and make that change. And I'm so happy I'm able to lend my experience to help in any way I can. Because Fiona's going to be in middle school and she doesn't mm-hmm. use the playground quite as much. But I know that feeling I had as a mom of a kindergartner. I know my friends' families. And I just think it's something that we can do now that families of the future and Minneapolis public schools, we don't have to do that to kids. And we have the opportunity right now with the budget, mm-hmm. with the replacement. I'm not asking for more money. I'm just asking you to do the smart thing with what you have right now.
Okay. Well, before you go, I just want to tell you again how grateful I am to your family. And here's what I would like to do. For your children, I would like to buy your children season passes to Valley Fair. I just heard Taylor Rivera say something about the season is opening. And so when we get off the phone, Josh is going to get all your contact information. And I want to buy each one of your kids a season pass to go to Valley Fair so they can visit as much as they like. And you tell them Auntie Shaletta said thank you for speaking up for kids like hers. And I just want to wish you one more time an amazing Mother's Day. God bless you. And thank you for the work that you are doing to help kids like mine.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much.
You're welcome. And y'all stick around. We've got even more to come on the Shaletta Show. That is my friend Fanshawn's favorite song. We have been friends since middle school, and she was just listening in to Nicole LaBelle's interview talking about that slightly intimidating seventh grader and reminded me of Fro, the bully at our school, and how much bigger she was than us and how she intimidated and sometimes terrorized us. And Fanshawn said they should have really leaned into social promotion for that young lady, because I swear Fro looked like she was about 30 years old in the seventh grade with grandkids. It was not a good look for the rest of us. Don't go anywhere. We've got more of the Shaletta Show coming up after the break.